And this call is now being recorded. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Wishing everyone a very happy new year 2011. And on today's CWG call on Thursday the 6th of January, we have Chuck Gomes, Cheryl Langdon Orr, Carlton Samuels, Frank Marsh, Konstantinos Komaitis, Krista Papak, John Nevitt, Bertrand de la Chapelle, Robin Gross, Richard Tindall, Alan Greenberg, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc, Dave Kissoun-Doyal, Marilyn Cade. From staff, we have Margie Milam, Kurt Pritz, Glenda Sangeri, and myself, Gisela Gruber-White. And we also have apologies today from Tony Harris, Evan Labovich, and Philip Shepherd. I hope I haven't left anyone off the list. If I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Cheryl and Chuck.
Oh, I think we're going to toss it over the wall straight to John, aren't we, Chuck? But
That works for me.
Perhaps just to preempt, I think it's a great thing that we've been able to pull this together in such short order, and wanted to recognise in particular the efforts that everybody has made, particularly those who are still on their annual breaks as well. But John, seeing as you managed to get some semblance of the English language out of all of the hoo-ha that was going on, if you'd like to take control, I think Frank and Chuck and I would be delighted for you to do that.
All right, thank you, Cheryl. So essentially what we did was we looked at the resolution and some of the comments that we pulled together in the last round right before Cartagena, as far as that drafting team we had together. And then so we drafted some responses for folks and there are six. Looks like there are six responses. I think we have 90 minutes, so let's endeavor to keep each one to no more than 15 minutes of discussion, and hopefully we could come up with some consensus, and we could meet the board's deadline of tomorrow. Goal. So I guess you have it up here on your screen, everyone in Adobe. Is anyone not in Adobe?
Yes, Carlton Samuels is not.
Yes, I'm not. I'm unfortunately at the spot where I can't get online access.
So, Carlton, if you want to get in a queue at any point, just chime in, okay?
Sure, thanks.
Okay. Can I just say hello? It's Mark Carvell, just joining from London. So,
great. Mark, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Yeah, and I'm just trying to get my Adobe up on the screen, but I will try and do that in a second. Okay.
I'm not on yet. It's Marilyn, but I will try to.
Okay, thanks, Marilyn. So we got three Chuck Gomes.
Yeah, and you may have a fourth before I'm done, John. I'm having every time I go to another screen, I can't get back to Adobe, so the only way to get in is to log in again. So.
Chuck has become vulnerable.
A stronghold, I'm only going to count one.
Chuck, this discussion should be riveting enough that you stay with us, though.
Yeah, I've decided that's probably the best tactic.
Okay, moving on. So the first issue relates to the of the board, the GAC, and the ALAC, and the objection process. And we look at clarifying the circumstances under which the board would vote with regard to a Rec 6 objection and or with GTLD applications generally. This language came pretty much from our last response to the board, just formatted a little differently and massaged a little to answer the specific question. Any comments on this first, we'll call it 1A? Okay. Any objection to 1A? Okay, so let's move on to 1B. And this relates to the role of the expert panel. And again, this language, for the most part, came from our last writing, and then it was supplemented a bit based on information from the meeting in Cartagena. So, any comment? What I'll call 1B.
Just because I note on the chat that Avery's just dialing in. And we did go through in record time the 15-minute allocation for A. You might just allow us to go back to A if Avery does have
Absolutely.
Any comments on the first part as well, John, that's all.
Avery, are you on yet?
Yeah, I just got on. Sorry.
Okay, great. So what we're doing is going through the draft letter. We went through 1A. There were no comments, but if you have any comments, now would be a great time to share them.
No, I did not.
Okay, and now we're on 1B. Again, role of the expert panel. Tried to massage the different. Any comments on 1B?
Cheryl here. Not so much a comment that we need to necessarily put into the text, but it was just a fleeting thought. Because this is one of the things where we did not reach consensus, but the final recommendation in our report did indicate that if given time, energy and inclination, we probably would have been able to reach consensus on a number of things that we did not. Does that point either need to be reiterated in a general sense in this response to the board resolution out of Cartagena, or is it something that is appropriate for this section of our response? In other words, do we believe that we could, if given the time, the energy, the facilitation and the inclination, reach consensus on this particular point?
Any comments on that? Richard and Alan.
I'm still working on getting onto Adobe, but I guess...
Okay, Marilyn, you go first.
Maybe the question is, it seemed to me that the board was particularly challenged in the areas where we did not reach consensus, if that's a fair statement. And so is it worth our examining particular areas, briefly at least, to see if there is further consensus to be built? Because we think that would be more benefit to the board to have that guidance?
Richard?
Yeah, this is Richard Tindall. I think on this issue, it's going to be very hard to get consensus. I think we've seen that there's a pretty broad, in fact, very broad divergence of views on role of the...
It could be.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've captured, John, in the text here pretty well some of the issues where we do have disagreements.
It could be.
And one of them is, should there be any sort of written advocacy on the part of the objector or the applicant? So I think some folks don't even want to see that. So to answer the original question, my view is that we will be unable, I think, to get consensus on this one.
No, leave it.
Sorry, Richard. So, could everyone put their phones on mute if there's background noise?
I have to talk through this.
I think it might be misleading on this.
I got to talk through this.
For us to indicate that we could potentially get consensus on this. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I think it's very unlikely.
Hey, Helen?
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't put a comment on this one saying we might reach consensus, because I agree this may be one of the more difficult ones. I do think it's a valid statement to put up in the overall introduction, however, that if there are points where the board would still like it and there's enough time, then the group reconvening in the on the whole, and I don't think this group quite that, I think we need to add the statement that given sufficient time, and a explicit request, consensus might be reached on some of the issues. So I think it's a fair statement to say at the beginning. I wouldn't put it on this one explicitly, though.
So which ones would you put it on?
I'm simply saying that if the board would have a much higher level of comfort with consensus being reached, they should task us to try to reach consensus on this point or others. I just wouldn't highlight it on this. I think it's a valid point in general.
No. I'm actually down in the corner.
Bertrand?
Yeah, hi. I would like to try to highlight that the formulations that John had put together are very interesting, but it could be probably distinguished in different layers. There seemed to be a consensus in his wording, and I sensed that in the discussions in the group, and that would probably help the board, that there is a consensus basically on two extremes or against two extremes. One is a consensus in the group that we are not dealing with a full DRSP thing that is completely external and that takes a decision and that's it. And I think it's correctly worded, but it could be highlighted. The other extreme is that every single objection goes directly to the board, and the board then decides whether it goes and calls expert advice. In between, so these are two elements that I think are relatively consensual. The key question is how formal or not is the process for objections. And this is something that the current wording has not clarified. Is there something that receives the objection, or does it go to the board and then the board decides to call experts? I think that's where the discussion on the modalities is still fuzzy. On the two other things, the two extremes, I think the message can be clear to the board that the two extremes are not supported.
Okay, Richard?
Yeah, that's Richard again. Yeah, in answer to the general question, should we have some sort of introductory that with more time and effort we might get consensus? At the moment, I'm sort of opposed to that, to putting a sentence like that in there. I think that's what this call is about, is to try and find on these issues, do we have further consensus? Is our position changing on them? And if that happens, let's put it in for specific items. But I'm opposed to putting some sort of general statement that we might find consensus in the future. We have been discussing this for a long time, and we haven't reached consensus on some issues. And I think it might be misleading for the board for them to see a statement that says, if we only had another month, we might get there. What worries me is that the reaction to that might be, well, okay, let's spend another month on this. And I believe on many of these issues that we're not able to reach consensus.
Okay. Chuck, three.
Yeah. thanks, John. First of all, I think we know that we don't have to ask the question, would the board prefer consensus? I think it's fair to assume that, they would much rather see a consensus recommendation than one that's mixed. So we don't even need to ask that question. The question is really, should more time be spent in trying to reach consensus? And several of you suggested that that may or may not be possible in given cases. And secondly, a complicating issue in this whole thing is that the CWG does reach consensus on something. How does that fit in the overall equation? Where do the SOs and the ACs that are participating in this group really come in? So it may not just be a matter of the CWG reaching consensus. Where does it go from there? How are the SOs and the ACs involved in that process? Is it sufficient that the CWG reaches consensus without endorsement by the SOs and ACs? That itself is a very controversial question.
Indeed. Okay. Alan?
Yeah, 3 points. In terms of the general statement and lead-in, I was reacting to Cheryl's statement about putting one in this particular in the particular section 1B, I think. And I was saying I don't recommend that. I could live with it or support it in the intro. I wasn't really advocating it. In terms of Bertrand's questions of, should every objection go to the board and the board then send it to an external advisor, I think it was relatively clear. We are stating what we believe the board must do, and in this case it was the board must ratify or uphold an objection that if an external provider does, but not need to do it if the external provider rejects it. If we are not specifying what the board must do, the board is free to delegate it to staff or do whatever they choose. So if we haven't spoken to what the exact details of the process are, we're implicitly saying it's not all that critical to us. And in terms of Chuck's last comment on endorsements, there's nothing we can do to cause one of the external groups to do something. In the case of the last one, the ALAC supported it. The GNSO, I believe, did not take any action on it. So each of those groups will do what they want to in the time frame they choose. We have no control over that. Thank you.
Aubrey?
Yeah, I just wanted to support what Alan just said, that if this group can offer what this group would do, so it's, I think it's quite sufficient for the CWG to say, yes, we could reach consensus, no, we couldn't, and yes, we could work to see if we could further reach consensus. With the subject of whomever or whatever wants to endorse or not endorse being totally separate, of course, when we report it, that this is what the CWG came up with and that it has not been or it has been endorsed. But I think those are completely separate issues and that the CWG itself should not get bogged down in worrying about which group may be willing to endorse things versus which group never endorses things versus which group has no process for endorsing things, et cetera. Thanks.
Thank you, Aubrey. Bertrand.
Yeah, I just wanted to come back on the comment that Alan was making. If I look at what the outcome of this discussion is, there is a little bit of fuzziness at the moment on what is the real channel that will be contemplated for filing an objection. If it is merely a panel that is set up ad hoc to advise the board, then who do you file the objection to? And at the moment, we are in a situation where the applicant guidebook has a formula where there is a DRSP, whether we call it this way or not, but there is a specific format for filing an objection. In the wording of this second part in the CWG input, it is not clear to me anymore what is the recommendation, that there is a permanent body or that they are set up completely ad hoc. And so this is where the fuzziness in the recommendation lies in terms of the recipients and the board, if you see what I mean.
I'm wondering if Kurt or Margie could maybe take a stab at explaining what the process in the closed applicant guidebook would be that might address Bertrand.
No. Actually, I'm not talking about the process in the applicant guidebook, which I know. What I'm talking about is the formulation in the document of the CWG that we're reviewing here,
okay,
which does not seem to imply the establishment of a formal objection recipient.
Right, because we didn't reach consensus on that point.
I don't think we really cared a lot, as long as the outcome for a successful objection is as described in this document. That seems to be the critical thing unifying the group.
Okay.
My line's gone buzzy. You might have to mute me and I'll have to type.
Okay. Aubrey? Is that from before? Or? Aubrey. Okay. So there's no one in the queue left. So, you know, to Cheryl's point, would folks be okay with if, as we go through these, there's any recommendation in here or any issue that we're discussing in here where we think more time would be appropriate to actually say it there? You know, I'm taking Richard's point that to have an overview of that point, and I guess Alan echoed that after, might send the wrong message. So, you know, if we think that we're in a position that we might be able to reach consensus on a specific issue that we're discussing in here, then we should put it in there, but not put an overall give us more time request. That fair? Okay, hearing no objection to that. So, Any other comments on 1B? Any, if there are any...
Am I muted or...
But now you're not.
We just heard you talk.
Oh, okay, sorry. My line went buzzy and I just assumed I was muted because that's what they should do if my line goes buzzy. And I was, you know, typing something that was going to take 57 pages to finish. So if I'm not muted, I'll just quickly draw your attention to the short version that I put in. I just wondered if one of the reasons, the issue in the type of expert advice that the CWG was referring to and what we were clearly not able to do is come down in one particular design criteria of what it should be, but we certainly could agree what it shouldn't be, is that, for example, to get licensed mediators, that can, you know, cause a problem. Do they have to be on call? Do they? No, I mean, there's lots of administrivia that's associated with something that we may be proposing here. So I just wondered if perhaps Margie or Kurt could help us. Is that some of the reason that they were wanting more input on this particular point?
Margie, Kurt?
This is Margie. Can you repeat the question? I think either Kurt or Amy
sure.
will answer.
Basically, if you've got what a whole lot of people don't like, which is the dispute resolution provider versus licensed mediators versus ad hoc panels that are thrown together as the need arises versus some other form of expert advice. Each of those models would require very different types of admin and preparation. For example, the example I was putting in the question is that if you want licensed mediators on a particular topic, you'd have to have them on call, you'd need them well prepared. There's a lot that goes around that, and was the board looking for more information from us on any of that and why we were going against some and towards other tendencies. Not reaching full consensus, I realise, but why some things were less popular than others.
This is Kurt. I don't know if this answers your question. I think the information the board was seeking went to the distillation of the issues that occurred in the two meetings in Cartagena. So the long time that everybody spent in meetings in Cartagena discussing these issues seemed to distill down to, you know, the three issues that were listed in the board resolution. And, you know, that we were discussing the first one, which is the role of the board, the GAC and ALAC in the objection process. I think that in preparation for launching the new GTLD process, well, I know that regardless of the type of dispute resolution that occurs, that significant work is planned up front, and it has in fact already taken place in not just identifying who dispute resolution providers would be, but onboarding them and preparing them, you know, in advance of even potential objections, so that you know, the those that are resolving disputes in some manner are in place and you know, knowledgeable of how decisions are going to be made or disputes are going to be resolved between the parties. I don't know if that answers your question or not.
To some extent, I suppose it does, because if there's been considerable resources put into setting up a system, that obviously is going to have to be taken into consideration, so we probably shouldn't waste too much more time on it.
And I've got Chuck in the queue.
Yeah, and my comment, John, is a process one. I think it was very helpful in 1A that you ended it with the question, does anybody have any objections to the wording that was there? And there were no objections, so we had, at least for those on the call, a fairly clear understanding of where we were at together. I would suggest, personally, that you do that for each one of these things, including 1B, before we move on to number 2.
Yep, that makes sense. Okay, any objections to the wording in 1B?
Before you do that, can I make a comment, please? It's Marilyn. I can't.
Sure, go ahead.
I just want to make a comment about practicality of dealing with these kinds of activities. I do think that we need to recognize that there's going to have to be the buildup of a certain amount of expertise. And if it's not on, if it's not through the centralization of a process that's embedded with a short list of providers, then I think it would have to be embodied in some other way, whether it is a staff expert who is the keeper of the process. And that probably goes to the question of someone's going to have to receive the complaints, et cetera. But isn't this in some ways almost similar to the ESSAC, the ESSAC process, where the ESSAC has to convene a technical group to look at an issue to see if it is going to threaten the stability of security? And I'm not suggesting we go into a deep dive on discussing that, but and this may be a question more for Margie or for Kurt, but I think elsewhere at ICANN, there is at least a little bit of a process identification of something that results in the convening of a group of experts.
You might be referring to the RSTEP.
Actually, no, I'm not, but...
It's another example of a convening of a group of experts, so you might want to have referred to them. Okay, Margie or Kurt, do you have any input on that? Okay, so is there any objection to the language in 1B?
John, it's Margie. Just to clarify the question, the question is whether we have a process internally at ICANN to convene expert panels. Is that the question, Marilyn?
Margie, I was just saying, I think within ICANN there are at least a couple of other places where that does exist. And even though this might not be exactly the same process, it might be feasible to go look at where those processes exist and see what kind of ideas that would provide.
Okay, got the question. I guess that's really a question for Kurt on this processes.
I think the point for this call, though, is we didn't reach consensus on that issue. Should it be, a standing expert panel? Should it be a DRSP? Should it be a mediator? Is mediation an arm of alternative dispute resolution? All those issues, the form and scope of the expert advice, we did not reach a consensus on.
But we did get the strong support for context, which is in the text.
Correct.
And John, it's Marilyn again. We didn't reach consensus, but that doesn't mean that the input of members cannot be a contribution to be taken into consideration.
Of course not. Point taken. Okay. So hearing no objections or changes in language to 1B, let's move on to 2.
This is Bertrand. Just one quick comment. I didn't have time before you move. In the chat, there's been an interesting exchange, and I think it would be good probably to maintain to get into the document the distinction that Alan Greenberg was highlighting, which is that the main recommendation of the CWG is dealing with the need to take a position when there is a recommendation by whatever panel, and that the board must act if the panel decides that it is contrary to international law. but that for the group, the modalities remain relatively open. This distinction is important for the board to understand, I think.
Yeah, so it might be reflected in the language already where we say the board would have to specifically approve any recommendations from third-party experts to reject the TLD application based
on...
Yeah, I
agree. It is in the text. What I want to underscore is that this discussion in the chat has highlighted the message that the core recommendation is this, and that the modalities by which the panel is being established and so on is more something that is open for the board and the staff to finalize, if you see what I mean.
Yep, and
everything is in the text at the moment. It's a question of hierarchy and priorities that I'm highlighting. For the board, it's important to understand that there is one strong message and some flexibility for the rest.
Olivier?
Thank you. Thank you, John. I don't have a problem with the language in itself, but the format of it, and I know it might appear trivial, but the way that that it's formatted at the moment with regards to the different paragraphs, each paragraph starts with the CWD did not reach consensus. And the part about requiring that the expert skills be in legal interpretation of instruments of international law is just a little tag on at the end of the last paragraph in there. And I wondered whether that could be separated as a separate paragraph so that for the overall impact of the of this paragraph to be higher.
Yeah.
Okay, so just make start a new paragraph with the word furthermore?
Correct, yes.
Yeah, okay. Any objections to that? Okay.
And then another one, the paragraph right before that, there is one part which says there was strong support but no consensus that the experts should be able to look at the context of the application. Make that also a separate paragraph.
Okay.
Because we're batching things together which sometimes are a bit like apples and oranges. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Any objections to making this, separating those two out as separate paragraphs?
No.
Okay, thanks. That's helpful. All right, moving on to number two, and we're relatively on schedule. We'll take a cue on issues. This is the standard, which I think probably will take some time in this meeting. We're talking about the incitement and instigation versus incitement or promotion, incitement to or promotion of. Alan?
Thank you. It wasn't I don't think it was in a formal document, but during one of the sessions, at least one board member said something to the effect of, we don't really understand the difference between incitement and instigation. Aren't they the same thing, or something to that, with that tone in it. And my recollection from the calls we had with our legal expert, or legal experts, because there were a number of them, was that incitement and instigation are terms that are used in both criminal law and in international law related to genocide and things like that, and do have very specific meanings. And if my recollection is not completely off base, it may be worthwhile putting that statement in. Because although the formal document did not make that reference, it was made by a number of people that the terms are the same, aren't they? And if indeed that's not correct, I think we need to clarify that. I'm not saying whether which expression be used in the text, just that those two do have specific meanings, and legal advice should be sought on it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments? But clearly, certainly in the meeting that we had downstairs in Cartagena, it seemed like there's still a lot of confusion over the issue of incitement to or promotion of versus incitement and instigation.
And there's also the question of, is either or sufficient, or do we want, the CWG came down, at least some people came down, saying both are required. And all I'm pointing out is they do have specific meanings, and that should be factored into the discussion. It's, we're talking about carefully defined terms here.
That might be the case, but I think we heard different interpretations of the different meanings, which created a lot of that confusion.
That's why.
Richard.
John, this is Richard. So, first of all, I think the language you've got here is pretty good. So it seems to work for me. On the point of this incitement, promotion, and instigation, I too don't truly understand the difference between these terms. And from what I've heard from various legal experts, there seem to be varying. Maybe it's jurisdictional, but there seem to be varying definitions. So if, and I'm not suggesting we do this, but if we were going to try and find some consensus on this, we would have to, I think, rather than just use the term, we would have to define it in the text so that everyone that is voting and everyone that reads it knows what the word, for example, instigation means. But absent that sort of thing, I just think the language that you have at the moment is probably the appropriate language. Certainly from seeing the staff response a month or two ago on this, it sort of shifted my view from when I originally voted for this. There's sort of ambiguity in my mind now as to what these various terms mean. And I think after multiple discussions on it, it's still not clear to me.
Then maybe we simply need a disclaimer saying these terms may have specific meanings in specific courts of law, and that should be taken into account.
Okay. So are you suggesting adding that to the text, Alan?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Any
obviously not that exact wording, but.
So I assume you want to put it based on the after the some admitted confusion of the legal impact of the word choice.
I'm sorry, I don't see where you are.
I'm in the looks like the third sentence.
Continue to request that the standard be. Is that where you're suggesting it's inserted, Alan?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm either not focusing or I don't see where that is. We're talking the paragraph saying in its report.
The third sentence reads, based on the ICANN response, the discussions in Cartagena during which several CWG members stated that they no longer agree with the recommendation and some admitted confusion of the legal impact of the word choice.
Okay.
CWG may no longer have consensus on this issue. We could add your language was something like these terms may have specific meanings in different courts.
Yeah, we note that these terms may have specific and possibly varying meanings in different courts.
So if I add a parenthetical,
in other words, they have to go do some homework, not just blindly take our words.
Okay, so after the clause legal impact of the word choice, we say we note that these terms may have specific meanings in different courts.
John, I think you might say we recognize.
Okay. We recognize that these terms may have specific meanings in different courts.
Yeah, I can look at that.
I have Bertrand, and then Richard.
Or actually, one more chance. There are perhaps well-defined but possibly varying definitions.
They have specific meaning. So you want well-defined meaning?
I'd say well-defined but possibly varying.
Well-defined but possibly varying meanings in different courts. Okay. Bertrand.
Yeah, I think, and I'm speaking only for myself, but I think that we may be reaching, at least as far as I'm concerned, a level of competence here regarding the distinction, because indeed there are very big differences. What I understood from the discussion is that basically we have on one hand incitement to a promotion of, which is a relatively lower threshold, and incitement to and instigation of, which is a higher threshold, which is the reason why people have aligned more or less with one option or the other, depending on whether they want to raise the bar or lower the bar. I think the main thing we need to find out is the recommendation of what else can be done, not by the group, because here our level of understanding is, I think, limited, but what can be done between now and the finalization of the document to set the cursor exactly in the right place. What I understood is that there is a confusion about what could be covered and not covered. I don't know who could be an appropriate advice for the board when it makes the final determination, but maybe a line that says a clarification should be made to the board before final decision on the practical implementation of those things. I mean, you see what I mean? It's not for the CJW to have obviously a clear position on one or the other. What I feel is that there is a cursor here, and we will have collectively to find the exact place where we put it in the end. So there's probably a slight additional step that I anticipate beyond the CWG group work.
Okay. So you're recommending something like, what is it, clarification should be made to the board on these varying interpretations?
Yeah, the varying interpretation of those terms, like the formulation that was before, I think.
Any objection to that? Let's go through the
I don't think it's really necessary. We're already giving the caution that this is a minefield that the definitions may vary and they have various meanings. That implies to me the board better get good advice, not pick a random choice.
And
I would hope we don't have to tell the board that. But doesn't hurt to tell them.
I'd like to be in the queue. I would support what Bertrand said, and I will just announce that I can't get into the Adobe Room, John, because the host has blocked entry. So I'm going to have to keep... I could just press a button on the phone to let you know that I'm interested in speaking. That might be more decorous.
No problem. You can just chime in. I've got Mark...
Yeah, thanks. I'm not that familiar with the discussions that took place as to which is the term that has the most support within the working group, but it does seem a crucial issue. It's definitional, and the process of defining it should rely on some expert legal advice. So I guess I'm coming in with Bertrand that we... perhaps highlight here in the text the need for the board to take expert legal advice as to which term is preferable. I mean, promotion to a sort of non-legal expert seems softer than instigation, and so what might be caught does rely very much on precise definition. And, if we can't agree that within the group, then over to the board.
Great.
Thanks.
Okay, Olivier, I see you're typing something on the chat with a suggestion. Do you want to articulate that, or and then I've got Cheryl.
Thank you, John. It's just that whilst we were having a discussion on this, I had a look at Google, and it looks as though incitement and instigation appears to be some kind of a term that is widely used out there with regards to racial discrimination and other strong types of discrimination. So that's all. I think we definitely would need a proper advice on that, but I will support the term. Thank you.
Cheryl?
2 points. First of all, I certainly want to support the insertion into the text suggesting that very, very definite and very expert, if not several sets of expert advice, because it's probably going to be competing, is sought on these terms. I also wanted to suggest that this is another point where I think... I would like to propose that we highlight the argument that is outlined in the last sentence on that paragraph, John, where you've written, with that said, many members of the CWG still argue for the higher standard. I think if those words, if we could perhaps discuss if those words can be in some way highlighted. With the addition of, the second thing was with the addition of the text proposed by Alan further earlier in the paragraph, I would suggest that we do not need to confirm with a straw poll on the call. And I just want to put it on the record that, Richard, you might have been convinced by staff's concerns about, you know, various political parties and such and so forth, but I was far from convinced. So I think that we aren't going to fix this on this call. We just need to make sure that we have language in this response that's appropriate. So I don't think we need a straw poll. I do think we need to add the sentences as Bertrand, Olivier and others have suggested, and I think with Alan's additions we don't need to do more than perhaps, if you agree, excuse me, I'm losing my voice, highlight that some of us certainly want a higher standard than incitement or promotion.
Okay, so it's like we should add Alan's sentence, add Bertrand's sentence, and then delete the purple, and then make that last sentence its own paragraph to highlight the sentiment.
If not its own paragraph, just boldface the many members would argue with a higher standard. Just a bold-facing of a few words or italicizing, whatever works.
That'll confuse it with the board statements, but just a separate paragraph should do it.
Yeah. Okay, whatever works, as I said.
Thanks, Cheryl. I've got Konstantinos.
Yes, just very briefly, I would like to reiterate basically what Bertrand said here. The whole issue is whether we want to raise the bar or not, and I think that it is crucial that we bring to the attention of the board, at least, that there is also the incitement and instigation criterion, which is widely used in international law, and it's mainly used for hatred crimes under German law, but generally speaking, it's becoming even more popular for international law. But I think that the board needs to understand that there is also this criterion and the difference between incitement and instigation and incitement of or promotion to is exactly the bar. So I agree with the idea that the board needs to seek advice, expert advice on the issue, and it's ultimately up to the board to decide whether they want to have a higher standard for these objections or a lower standard. And depending on which direction, the answer will come naturally, because if the board opts for the higher standard, then incitement and instigation is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you, Konstantinos. Okay. Sounds like we exhausted that issue, and what we'll do is make these three changes and circulate a new draft right after this call. With those changes, does anyone else have any objections or any comments on 2A? Not, we'll move to 2B. Okay. 2B, we have these grounds of discrimination that were discussed in both the public session and then the meeting we had downstairs in Cartagena. And then Aubrey has filed a comment on this. I guess it was this morning, my time this morning. And any other comments? Or Aubrey, do you have a suggestion on how to address your concerns?
Can we have Aubrey unmuted?
Fortunately, I can't unmute.
No, she may not be able to unmute, but meeting
I just got myself unmuted, I think.
There you go.
Yeah.
It kept telling me it was an unacceptable option, so I thought I was truly muted. it did, honestly. I bet you've never heard that before. But anyway, yeah, what I was saying is basically the position I've been taking is that either we have to add a more definitive list, or we need to go to a completely implicit list. And as the last sentence in this had said, that people were generally comfortable with adding "and any other." And I was just indicating that I was not comfortable with that particular addition. what I'm comfortable, and the conversation was going so quick at that point that, you know, I'm afraid I didn't make myself clear. What I'm comfortable with is deleting all the explicit references and saying, you know, discriminations that are generally recognized under international law, and give no examples. But if we have a listing of examples, then I think we have to have a more complete one. And that's the position I was taking.
So the sentence reads now that suggestion in Cartagena of a catch-all discrimination criteria, such as any other discriminations that are generally recognized under international law, seems to be acceptable to many of the CWG members.
Right.
Should we add a sentence that say other members prefer listing all of the discriminations suggested by the CWG or only the catch-all, thereby avoiding a sense of prioritization among discriminations?
That would work for me.
Works for me, too.
Right.
John, you should be a lawyer.
Yeah. Alan?
Yeah, in one of the meetings there was a discussion of saying we could name that statements without examples of any sort are vague and often not well understood, but that we could give two or four or whatever, saying such classes of discrimination might include but not be limited to, and then list a few, just so people get the flavor of what we're talking about.
A lot of beeping going on.
Certainly is. It's not me for once.
Hey, any thoughts on that suggestion by Alan? That's pretty much saying what we have there is we list some of the discriminations and some folks. What we'll say is some folks. You know, want a catch-all, and some folks want it all or none.
Yep. What I'm saying is if we list any, it should include the explicit statement that this is not the definitive list.
I guess we're not listing any in this document. Hey, Frank.
It's Frank Welch here. I actually have my hand up, and the I think just a caution that this can cut either way, and it has done in discussions with the board in my experience already, that if you give any specific examples, they automatically seem to take on a higher level of priority than others that aren't listed. Better to not list than to list, even for specificity, in my view. Because
okay.
Anything that's mentioned automatically assumes a higher level of priority. Thanks.
Bertrand?
Yeah, two points. The first thing is to ask, Avery, does that mean, Avery, that you would not support the existence of a sort of catch-all if there are explicit mentions? What I understand from what you say is that if there are explicit mentions, there should not be a catch-all. Is that a correct understanding?
Up until that last phrase, if I can go, though I don't have my hand up. Up until that last phrase, I was fine. In other words, that if there are explicit mentions, there should be more of them, that list that we gave.
Mm.
I am not comfortable with some explicit mentions and a catch-all. I am comfortable with replacing any explicit mentions with just a catch-all.
Yeah, that I understand.
Going along with what Frank just said.
Okay. The other thing is we're just talking about explicit mentions, but the if I remember correctly, the current DAG or the current applicant guidebook lists a limited number of topics. Would that mean that you would support removing them completely from the from the paragraphs, the related paragraphs?
Yep, and just putting in a general catch-all. Yep.
Okay.
We heard both sides of the spectrum. You know, Alan said list a couple and put a catch-all, and others. So I think we capture that, both of those sentiments.
Yeah, what I said is it helps comprehension. I don't think it's mandatory.
Yeah. Okay. Any other comments? Bertrand, your hand.
No, I'm done.
Okay. Any other comments, any objections to language with as amended that we discussed adding that sentence? Okay. All right, let's move on to 3, where we talk about ALAC and GAC objections. Alan?
I have 2 points. There was a significant discussion in Cartagena about this, and the bottom line seemed to come down to of that if there is costs associated with the ALAC or the GAC making such objections, that there must be funding for it. You know, it didn't really matter whether we get an allotment and spend it on this or the price is zero or we do it through the independent objector. But the bottom line is, if there's a cost associated with it that is not where the funding is not provided, it's effectively saying we don't have the ability anymore. And I think that needs to come out here. My second point is a small one, but nevertheless.
Wait, second. Where do you want to put the first point?
I hadn't thought about that.
All right, why don't you make your second point, and I'll...
Yeah, okay. Probably if you put a sentence after the first sentence of the paragraph says a full consensus of the CWG, if you follow that with a sentence saying the implication of non-zero costs or a cost without appropriate funding negates the ability of the ALAC or GAC to make such objections. The wording may not be elegant, but something to that effect. I mean, there is no independent source of funding to these groups.
So if I add a sentence that says ICANN should provide appropriate funding for such objections?
If there is a cost,
sure.
Then ICANN must provide appropriate funding.
And it's Marilyn, I would support that. I'd like to make a further comment on that.
On this point, why don't you go ahead and, Alan, just hold your second point.
Sure. Yes, my comment is on this point. There is a public, I want to use the term broadly, but there is a public interest aspect to there being some kind of a mechanism, a reasonable mechanism to provide funding for such interventions, if I could call them that. And I personally think that there has to be such a mechanism. So I don't know if we need to spend a lot more time on this call about what that mechanism would look like, but I would like to endorse the fact there needs to be such a mechanism. And I want to give as an example the practicality of I live in the United States of America, and in order for the government, but I work on a global basis with many, many, and am familiar with many, many other countries' situations. In order for a ministry or a subgroup in a ministry to get financial approval for something like this, it may be an incredibly complicated process.
Yep.
It can't necessarily come from the normal budget of such an entity. And I think we have to show our sophistication as a global multi-stakeholder organization in recognizing that.
Alan, you want to go? Oh, Mark, are you on this point, or is it another point?
It was a more general point regarding the GAC, really.
All right, so then let me get to Alan's second point, and then we'll move to Mark.
Okay. In the paragraph straddling page 3 and page 4 on the detailed ALAC processes, I understand that what is there was proposed by the then-chair of the ALAC, but I really think it's not appropriate to put that level of specificity and detail in something which has not been discussed formally by the ALAC at all, at least hadn't as of the time I left it a few weeks ago. So, you know, and given that it mentions the concept of a supermajority vote, a term which is not normally used within the AILAC, I think we need a more general statement akin to what is the GAC one, as opposed to the detail. If that statement does stand, however, there's a typo at the top of page 4. They are engages. I presume it should be they are engaged.
Let me jump to Cheryl, because she raised her hand. Probably, if you're addressing this point, that'd be great.
It is just on this point, exactly. Look, that text was put in early on in drafting to be very clear that what at least the AILAC would be doing would be in keeping with its standard operational procedures and requirements for accountability and transparency. So you can cut the detail to, we will do it properly, we will do it well, and we will do it in a manner which is in keeping with the high standards of the AC that we are, and I suspect GAC would be doing the same.
Yeah, and I think your expression just now of accountability and transparency is perhaps just the right tone.
So the GAC...
You know, we were asked specifically those questions. We do have to answer them.
Okay, let me go to Mark.
Yeah, thanks. Well, it's just a general point that the GAC hasn't considered any of this, including the issue of fees. I mean, my sure expectation is that the GAC would say no to any prospect of having to pay a fee. We provide advice. We're not in the business of lodging objections on a fee-paying basis. So I wonder if we could just add a sentence in here that this is all subject to the GAC having undertaken full consideration of these proposals. Let me add that in just to sort of underline that we, you know, to avoid the risk of preempting the GAC discussions. Sorry if that sounds rather negative.
Yeah, I mean, we
that's the status we're in, I think.
Sorry, we say the CWG felt it was outside its scope to comment on the process for the GAC or AILAC to lodge objections. The CWG assumed that any Rec 6 objections put forth by the GAC or AILAC would be approved according to their own internal processes, and then we could add, if you want, taking into account transparency and accountability principles as well as consensus-based decision-making.
Perfect. Saves me typing what I was typing.
Good. I think we should hire you, John.
John, it's Marilyn. I would support the general context of what you just said, and I thank you, Mark, for your intervention. I think that was very helpful. I will just note, and I leave it up to the governments to comment on, but it may be that since we haven't, it may be that there are governmental entities outside of the GAC membership who may be affected by this as well. At the same, I don't think we need to put that into our document, but I think it's something for the Reg 6 group to recognize that an IGO, an international intergovernmental organization, or a governmental entity that is not a part of the GAC would also be affected. Am I right about that? And so whatever decision is made would have implications for how said party also would file objections. Now, I don't see anything wrong with that because clearly there are lots of businesses that are not a member of the business constituency. They would be affected by this as well. But I think it's just worth noting.
Yes, Mark speaking. That's a very valid point, actually. We mustn't forget that there are governments who are not on the GAC.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But is that impacted by this section, which is talking only about GAC and AILAC objections?
No. Alan, I don't think it's affected, but I think we need to be aware of it because, you know, We can't. I'm not saying we have to act on it. I just think we need to be aware of it.
Hey, Bertrand?
Just a few points. The first thing is that in Cartagena, there was a clear message that I heard from the CWG that whatever procedure is being put in place for the GAC or ALAC to intervene in this kind of topic, the desire was that the GAC and respectively the ALAC would develop their own procedure. So maybe a clearer formulation saying that there's consensus within the CWG that the GAC and ALAC would develop their respective procedure is probably important. The second thing is that at least for the GAC, there is always the capacity to use the normal advice procedure regarding anything that would be contradictory to principles of international law. If the GAC, according to its own principles and procedures, were to issue an advice that, in the view of the GAC, a given string is contradictory to those principles of international law, I think this would naturally trigger the provisions of the bylaws. The problem is that, on the other side, for the ALAC, there is no such guarantee that the advice or comment by ALAC is being taken into account. I remember that during the discussion there was some thinking given to having a sort of similar request for the board to be to respond to such a comment by the ALAC. I don't know if this has been pursued in the group. And finally, I think this dovetails with the debate that Robin wanted to have on the independent objector. It is clear, I suppose, that for the GAC and ALAC, one way to avoid having to pay fees, given the administrative difficulty of doing so, is to go potentially through the independent objector. So maybe that's one of the benefits of having an independent objector.
Okay, Frank?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, I agree with what Bertrand was saying. I just wanted to come back to two issues, really. One is the GAC, obviously, agreeing with Mark. The GAC is in no position to pay fees, so that's just not even open to consideration, really. Bertrand's point that the GAC does have the mechanism for provision of advice, and certainly in any discussion within the GAC, which, as Mark has said, and I reemphasize, has not yet taken place in the GAC, my suggestion to the GAC would be that, in fact, the GAC would stick within its existing mechanisms of providing advice to the board and use that existing mechanism for anything to do with this sort of objection.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to comment on the question of governments who are not part of the GAC. It's impossible, I think, for the CWG. I mean, the CWG could certainly remind the board if they think that's necessary that there are governments that aren't part of the GAC, of course. But it's not, I think, for the role of the CWG to try and propose mechanisms for governments that aren't part of the process already. We can only work within the existing processes. Governments that are outside, I think, just can't be commented on within this mechanism. It just doesn't seem to me to be appropriate. Thanks.
I have a question for Frank.
Yes.
Frank, am I correct that the GAC does provide observer status to the IGOs? I believe that's the case, right? ITU, UNESCO, WIPO.
Yeah, Mark speaking. Yeah, they're all
NGOs are automatically invited to be observers.
The IGOs.
Yes. Sorry?
The IGOs, the intergovernmental UN organizations.
Sorry, yes, that's what I meant. If I said something else, it was a mistake. Yes, they are automatically invited to be observers.
Right.
And there have been none that have applied that have been turned down. So, but on the other hand, there are, of all the possible ones that could be members, there are a relatively limited number.
But still,
the ones with the keenest interest, I think, are members.
Yeah. So
sorry, observers, not members.
Right, but they would be covered they would be covered by this process as well.
Yes, although
for the GAC.
Yeah, so certainly the GAC would be in a position to provide advice on their behalf. The same as with any governmental member, absolutely.
Okay, good.
All right, Alan.
Yeah, just commenting on Bertrand's statement about the ALACS advice being treated the same as the GACS. Certainly, it's an issue that has been discussed much. However, given the radical difference in the terms in the bylaws that surround advice from the GAC with respect to advice from the ALAC, which I believe isn't mentioned, I don't see them being equivalent anytime soon. So I don't think we can assume that there will be an ALAC process equivalent to advice from the GAC. One might also ask, however, even if the GAC were to give advice to the board, what process would the board take to get it into the dispute process? Perhaps the board would go to the independent objector. I don't know. But so that's a board problem that it would have to handle, not ours. But I think we still need the process for the ALAC, if not. And I see no reason not including the GAC. Whether they ever exercise it or not is a different matter. I don't actually foresee the ALAC exercising it all that much, but I think the existence of the process is important.
Okay, Frank, is that from before, or do you have another point?
Apologies, coming down.
Okay, all right, so it sounds like we'll add the language about transparency and accountability and consensus-based decision-making in the first paragraph, delete the second paragraph with the specifics of what ALAC might use, and we essentially give the flexibility to both ALAC and GAC to come up with whatever processes they so choose. We'll also add the language about appropriate funding. Any other comments on three?
And just the fact, this is Bertrand, and just maybe the fact that the GAC always have the possibility to use the normal advice.
Should this group mention that, you think, or? Well, we do, I guess.
We're saying that there should be a process for the GAC to raise an objection. If the GAC wants to use other vehicles, that's the GAC's choice.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Number four. Taken from mostly from Robin's note and a little from Aubrey's note on this issue related to the independent objector. Any comments on number four? Any objection to number four? Robin, you're fine with it, I presume, right?
Hi, yes, thanks a lot. I think I thought that looked really good. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So here are no objections to number four. I think what we'll do is make these changes that we discussed on the call today. We'll get them out relatively soon and send a draft out for final comments. And if there's any, if there are any comments, you know, please put them in red line format. Otherwise, we'll hopefully meet our deadline for tomorrow.
John, I have a question, and it's probably for Kurt and Marjorie.
Okay.
It's Marilyn speaking. My understanding is that there is also a request out to the SG/constituencies for that was distributed through the council. For comments about our views on Rec 6. And as the BC
yeah,
chair.
Yeah, Margie, I can comment on that.
Yeah.
So there was a motion in Cartagena at the GNSO Council meeting regarding the Rec 6 report, and the motion basically directs the stakeholder groups and the constituencies to provide comments as appropriate to the Rec 6 report.
And the deadline for that?
There is no deadline. The motion said as soon as possible.
Well, could you help me understand if there's no deadline, but the deadline for the REC6 working group is tomorrow, if there's no deadline for comments from the SGs and constituencies, how is that going to be helpful to the process?
Yeah, if I can clarify, Marilyn, that motion came on Wednesday in Cartagena before the board action.
Uh-huh.
So the GNS Council did not know that the board was going to resolve this issue the way that it did, and the council has not had a meeting until their first meeting next week. So it's just a question of timing, given the way that the whole process went in Cartagena.
Okay, so, you know, as the chair of one of the constituencies, we're undertaking developing comments, and obviously I don't want to put my constituency through work that's not going to be useful.
Yeah, I mean, those are very valid comments, Marilyn. You know, it's certainly something that council can take up next week, but I don't really know what else to suggest at this point.
Okay.
Aubrey?
Yeah, Bertrand had his hand up before me. But
I see a microphone under Bertrand.
Yeah, that's because somebody gave him permission to speak, so he got a microphone and that dropped him in the order.
Oh, okay, well, let's go with Bertrand first then.
Okay. No, I just wanted to highlight that if I understand correctly the paragraph 4, it basically says that the independent objector in case of recommendation 6 cannot initiate it on its own, unless there is at least one comment in the public comment. This is a significant evolution from the applicant guidebook today. Is the group completely comfortable with just having the reference to just one comment in the comment in the public comment period?
Where does it say public comment period?
An absolute request.
Bertrand, where does it say public comment period?
At minimum, there should be at least one party that has claimed during the public comment period that would be harmed by the creation of a TLD before the IO can object. So I think it's an interesting evolution because we could have gone to the complete direction where, the group could have gone in the complete direction of saying it has to be triggered or requested explicitly by somebody. I think that's where Robin was heading towards. What the formulation here says is that it is neither the independent objector can do it completely on its own, even if nobody has triggered it or has done it secretly, but it doesn't require that he is basically triggered or activated explicitly by someone. He or she can use an explicit public comment, and that's the minimal trigger. That's the clarification I get that I understand, and I would like to know if this is exactly what is meant. And I take the opportunity to do a final note that there is one point that we have not addressed in this discussion, which is the title of the paragraph in the applicant guidebook and the question of whether it's called public interest objections or principles of law, and maybe as a closure, we should deal with that very briefly.
Can you explain that?
So is my understanding correct?
About a public interest objection versus a recommendation?
No. On the description of the trigger for the independent objector regarding recommendation 6, that it is an in-between that requests that there is at least one public comment, and that it cannot initiate something on its own behalf or just by secretly being triggered by someone. I think that was an argument that Robin was making. I just want to make sure that I understand exactly what this paragraph means.
That's what it means to me, Bertrand. I think I share that understanding, but
okay.
It'd be interesting to hear if there are other understandings as well.
It's what it means to me, and it's why it has my support.
Aubrey?
Yeah, that's what it means to me. Going back to my previous point had been related to the one about the GNSO going for, Maryland's about the GNSO going for stakeholder Reuben constituency viewpoint. My impression would be that if we haven't done that by the same deadline that the CWG does, it's sort of a moot point and there's no reason to go to much effort. But, of course, you know, things keep slipping, so you never know when people are going to listen to stuff.
Hey, Alan?
Yeah, on a couple of points on that one. We don't know to what extent the board will put weight the weight to the fact that the GNSO as a whole has approved or not approved or rejected the CWG report. We can't read the crystal ball, so we don't know what the value of constituency stakeholder group or GNSO as a whole approval is or support is. So, you know, groups are going to have to decide what they do on their own. As I read this particular document, it doesn't say that a public comment is required. It says that's about the lowest level of input that the independent objector should be using, and other forms. Certainly, you know, if the ALAC lodges an objection, it doesn't have to be done through the public comment period. And I read the words "cannot be traced back" as not necessarily saying it's in the public record who made the objection, but that it can be traced, and under the under the right circumstances, it will be traced back, which is slightly different from being in the public record and may be appropriate depending on the decision of the independent objector.
Okay.
This is Robin. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah. Do you want to just say one party has publicly claimed publicly that it would be harmed, as opposed to the referring specifically to the public comment period?
I would be okay with that, because I think the point is that it's a public declaration, that it's not a secret one, and you know, whether it's in a public comment period or some other public mechanism that's set up, I don't think it's particularly important. But I think the salient piece is the public part, that it is a publicly known who is objecting.
For example, someone sent a letter to ICANN that gets posted on their public site.
Exactly.
Okay. Any objection?
I think that is a friendly, yeah.
Okay.
I think that's a friendly amendment for sure.
I'm not even sure there is a public comment period for all of these things.
There is.
Okay.
There is.
Okay.
However, this is Bethlehem. Sorry for chiming in, but this is different from what Alan was saying, which left the possibility that one party, not secretly, but not publicly, goes to the independent objector to raise the point. And if needed, this objection can be traced to that party, but it is not necessarily made public. So would Robin be uncomfortable with that, provided that there is a traceability?
Yes, I think I would. I mean, I think we're trying to be as transparent here as we can, and I think that it's important for the public to know if someone is objecting to a TLD.
I would support that.
Okay.
Support what?
The idea that there has to be a public, I think Robin's point, which is, if I can paraphrase it, Robin, you've done it much more eloquently, but that there needs to be a public, it needs to be publicly, there needs to be transparency that someone is objecting to a TLD.
Yep.
And you're only talking about at least one party. It's not like a huge burden.
That's right. Perhaps I've missed it in the discussion. I was unfortunately tied up during the discussion with the board in Cartagena, but I don't think we had not contemplated anonymous complaints, right?
Some statement that someone made during one of the calls implied that, however.
Well, when I was on the President's Strategy Committee, we took comments from the public on a number of other very sensitive issues, about the future of the organization, I think we wrestled to the ground the idea that comments may be private or confidential, but they can't be anonymous.
Okay.
That's the distinction we're talking about here.
All right. I've got a cube forming, and we only have minutes left. So any final comments from Bertrand and then Aubrey?
Yeah, just very briefly. The reason why I highlight those elements is that the current application guidebook allows for the independent objector to file something on his own. So what I understand is that the recommendation of the working group is to move significantly away from the notion of being completely acting on its own, that the minimal, the best situation is where it is triggered by somebody publicly, either by the lowest denominator, which is just public comments made in the on the public comment forum, and the independent objector picks it, or it is being triggered by some actor publicly, or, and this is where there might be ambiguity, whether there is a possibility for requesting not anonymously but not publicly the independent objector to pick up an objection, provided that it is traceable. But I understand that the message is that there should not be, as the paragraph says, that the independent objector should not take initiative on its own, which is different from the applicant guidebook. So I just wanted to highlight this to make sure that I understand it fully.
Okay. Aubrey, Alan, and Richard.
Yeah. Am I on mute or off?
You're good.
Okay, thanks. In terms of what Bertrand said, yes, that's my understanding, that the IO cannot do it on its own. I have a problem with this notion of traceability that includes not anonymous but confidential, etc. I think whoever's making the objection must be known, and that there's nothing confidential about that. It doesn't need to be traced. It is boldly stated, and that's what I thought we were saying. Thanks.
Alan?
Yeah, I realized as we're talking about this that I understand the lineage of where this paragraph comes from and the reason for putting it in here, but I realize that we are making a statement saying the CWG would like to make another recommendation without the statement that we made on all the others of the level of consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we really need to say this is coming from a, you know, perhaps a significant number of the members of the CWG, but it hasn't been subject to the formal consensus process or something else similar to that. I don't think we can make a statement without a measure of consensus saying it's coming from the CWG. That's not in line with how we've handled the rest of the things.
Okay. How would you change it?
In the CWG?
I would say there's strong support, but not consensus.
We don't know.
It hasn't been tested.
We don't know.
You can't say that.
No, we don't. Well,
so there's strong support, but consensus has not been measured.
That's
well,
right.
Actually, it's Marilyn. Is it? We've had a discussion about it, but we. This is also a subgroup of the CSG, right?
No.
No, I guess it's the full. Sorry, just looking here. Would we say that this was a topic that we began to discuss on this call? Because we've only touched on it in previous discussions, but not in any detail, right?
Given that we need to get the answer out by tomorrow, I think the best we can say is describe what the current situation is.
Okay.
I think John captured it in the last words. I don't have them in front of me.
Hey, Chuck?
Yeah, thanks, John. I think we have to be careful about using any of the terms that we specifically used to define the level of support in our original report. So I'm not sure we can really say there's strong support.
Significant?
So just, you know, I, I, I'm and I'm agreeing, I think, with most what everybody is saying here, is that, you know, we need to just qualify this, but let's avoid using any of the terms like full consensus or strong support, because we haven't gone through that process of determining that.
Okay, so there is significant support of the CWG members to make another recommendation related to the IO mentioned above?
John, why not just say, Cheryl here, the CWG would like to make another recommendation related to the IO mentioned above, but this has not been subject to a consensus call of the group.
That's good.
That's the facts. It's been out on the list. It's been, as Marilyn said, toyed with, and it has a number of us here in agreement, but it has not been subject to a formal call for consensus.
Yeah, I would say it has support from a number of members, maybe even a significant number, but has not been subject to a formal call.
Okay. All right, Richard?
It's just sort of at a high level here on this IO objection and whether there needs to be some sort of transparent trigger for the IO to do it. I mean, I just think we should all keep in mind that the standard's not changing. So in order for any objection to be successful, it still has to reach the standard of reaching international principles of law. And so what we're saying is for it to be successful, it's going to have to be inciting or promoting or instigating or whatever words we end up with, things like child pornography, things like violent lawless action, things like various forms of discrimination. It just seems to me as a practical matter that there's going to be an avalanche of public comment or strings of that nature. So just as a practical matter, I'm not that worried about, you know, one or two comments triggering the IO, because for the cases where it's going to be successful, I think we're going to see hundreds, if not thousands. I don't believe there's going to be those sort of strings, by the way, but if it did happen, I think that there would be a large amount of public comment.
Makes sense.
Okay. Good point.
First, I made a comment on the chat, which is relevant.
Yeah. Say that again, Alan.
Bertrand made a comment that the IO can also make a community objections that are community criteria, and I believe we are talking only about the ones that the kind of criteria that used to be called morality.
Yeah,
recommendation
absolutely.
Six only.
Mm-hmm.
It should
maybe should be mentioned somewhere.
Okay, I'll add recommendation 6 in here. We do mention the community objection by the IO in the prior paragraph.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Okay. All right, so I'll mark that up as Cheryl suggested and circulate next draft shortly.
And, John, this is Chuck, a question. Okay, so how do we bring this to closure? We've obviously got 24 hours, so it's going to be circulated. What does that mean? What if somebody has a comment? What if, you know, we're not going to have time to do multiple iterations here?
Yeah, I guess, you know, what we did last time was in the clarification document prior to Cartagena was we sent it out and asked for objections or any changes and gave everyone, you know, a certain amount of time to file any, and none came in, so we sent it on.
Okay.
If any come in, we could append them as an attachment, appendix, whatever.
Just as long as we have it, we know exactly how we're going to handle it, and we communicate that right up front in the communication that goes out.
Yeah.
Or another call tomorrow at the same time.
I would suggest, if following on from what Chuck said, Cheryl here, if we make it clear that we would be willing to simply append such objections if they're substantial. I mean, if it's, you know, we've misspelled something, then obviously it gets fixed. But it's one of those silence equals consent issues, I think.
Just a point, this is Bertrand. I think we're reaching the stage where we're basically at a sort of rough consensus type of situation. The question that is being asked by the to the working group, generally speaking, is given the time frame and given the fact that there will be further discussions in the community, including in San Francisco or in between, on some of those issues, can the members of the CWG live with the current draft, or do they have any very specific objections that would then be appended? I think that maybe should be the message for tomorrow.
Okay. I'm good.
And can I ask, are we going to, who's actually going to transmit it? Someone actually needs responsibility for, you know, pressing send. Chuck, are you capable of doing this now, seeing as you were primarily main chair for most of it?
Yes, I think I can. Yes.
All right, so Chuck, I'll get you the red line and the clean version of, you know, the changes that we discussed for you to get up.
Okay. Well, go ahead. You can go ahead and set to, because time's so short, go ahead and send that straight to the list so that there's...
Why don't I send it to the list, the just the red line, and then you could follow up with instructions on how we're going to get it, you know, approved or...
Okay. All right. I'll do that.
Just someone needs to own the press send at, you know, a minute to midnight on the 7th.
Yeah.
Right, Chuck.
We'll assume Chuck will do that unless we hear otherwise.
And which Chuck should I use?
I like the power of three, Chuck. Use Chuck three. I think that's good.
sorry to put back on the boiler the topic I raised earlier. What about the title of the whole section?
Of Section 4 of the entire thing?
No, the entire thing in the applicant guidebook. You know, currently it says public interest, limited public interest objection. What is the position of the group on what the title or the headline should be?
Well, I don't think that we ever reached consensus on that, did we? I mean,
we didn't even discuss it.
They used one that we had less consensus on, but...
this is Robin. If I could get in the queue on this...
Yeah, go ahead.
I thought we said something along the lines of that when we did take a poll, the public interest words came out among the lowest in the poll, and so we didn't support that particular wording, and that was the wording that had been included in the DAG. So we had an issue with that, but we didn't necessarily propose an alternative. We just noted that... The language in the DAG was among the least popular in the poll that we took.
Alan?
Sorry, were you calling on me?
Yeah, sorry, Alan.
Yeah, I was going to say something akin to what Robin said, that we could well note that it was they picked the worst instead of the best. And I'm assuming PIR is going to file an objection and threaten to sue if they call it that, so...
Okay, but that the current wording is there's no better formulation that the group would like to propose, like something that would be more more focused, like based on principles of international law or something like that.
I think we couldn't decide then. I don't think we should try to decide now.
Okay.
15 minutes after the meeting has ended.
It's just to facilitate the work of the board afterwards.
No, but we can. Pointing out the staff that they picked the worst one that we of the options we had, I think it says enough.
Okay. Evan, last comment.
No, sorry, my hand was up by mistake.
Evan.
Oh, okay. Maybe Evan's not here.
Okay. All right, so let's call this.
He is. He's in the room with his hand up.
But we don't hear him.
Unmute star 6 in this system, not star 7.
let's wrap.
He was muted. His line was muted in meeting view because it was bipping. So he probably can't unmute. Meeting view wanted to unmute.
Sorry, this is Gisela. I'm going to get him unmuted now. Just bear with me for a second.
Okay. Yeah, he's in the chat room now saying muted.
That's what I'm trying to say, yep.
Laurie, would you be so kind as to unmute Evan Labovich, please?
Yes, he has unmuted.
Hi there. See, not much to say, but I just wanted to make note that we did a poll of this some time back, and it should be, why don't we just present the results of the poll? There were a couple of options. Different ones had different votes. It's possible to see which ones had more support than others. Why not just present the results of that poll almost as an appendix? We don't need to redo it.
Didn't we do that in the original report?
We put it in the original report.
Well,
which of course, you know.
I just say, you know, we know what we didn't like, and these are the ones that we did like. There wasn't consensus, but these are the ones, and you can get a clear idea of which had more support than others.
Right. I guess the problem with that is that, you know, we get this feedback now from that, and we haven't discussed the issue. Hold.
Just a thought, rather than discussing it with this short, compressed time frame, and that we just remind them that there was an opinion poll taken. There wasn't 100% consensus on anything, but some clearly had more support than others.
Refer them back to the report.
Oh, you're there.
If you want to put in the excerpt, that's fine.
Okay.
Have another call.
That's
after.
It. You can mute me again.
That seems like a pretty safe thing to do, just reference back to the report, say that there wasn't consensus, but there were some options that had stronger support than others.
Okay, so I'm adding a sentence on the name.
Thank you, John, for taking the lead on this.
No problem. All right, I'll circulate this right away.
Richard's got his hand up.
Richard.
It may be a little too late to jump in here on this, but I'm just wondering why we're picking this, you know, one issue. There's 20 things that are in our report. We were asked to comment specifically on three of them, and we're tossing in others that we weren't asked to comment on, we didn't have consensus on, but we're reiterating. I'm wondering why we're reiterating this and not...
Because a board member asked us the question.
Our token board member.
He's hardly token.
So you're a token board member, huh, Bertrand?
Not in my view, he's not.
He's the only one on this call, though.
Bertrand would be, would a sentence that I just heard provide any value to the board?
I think, honestly, I think just reiterating the fact that the that there was a poll is not a bad idea.
Okay.
Doesn't need a lot, but just to keep it in mind.
But Tron, was this something that the board's collectively concerned about, or something that you're suggesting that would be useful?
I think the fact that the headline is between brackets is an indication of sorts. It means that it is something that can probably be improved. If it cannot, it cannot. It's always the reason why I asked was to sense whether there was big discomfort with the current title, sufficiently enough to say this is not an acceptable current title and we would really be worried if it were remaining, which I don't feel is the case. But the fact that it was within brackets shows that if anybody has a better idea, or if in the weeks to come there is a better formulation on the basis of all the discussion, it's still a little bit open. That's all. I just don't want to close things too quickly. And the reason why I ask is that it's always better to ask and then leave the things unaddressed.
Sure, no, I understand. That makes sense to me, but given that the information has already been put on the table, doesn't that mean that we should be coming up with new proposals then? Have not the existing ones already been articulated?
Well, that's a fair point. It was a way for me to basically ask whether the group had a strong sense regarding the current title. Let me put it this way.
We're taking longer discussing should we discuss it than we are to write the sentence.
Yeah. Okay. I'll draft something up and circulate it.
And what time, what deadline specifically should I use to close this off tomorrow?
Before going to sleep.
Can you use a UTC time, Chuck, whatever is chosen? You know, those of us who don't live in America really do appreciate being able to do a simple calculation.
Certainly.
Should we say 24 hours from when it's circulated?
Perfect.
Okay. That works for me.
All right, I better get cracking.
Just needs to be enough time that if there are any objections, to format them before the final document is submitted.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, John.
Nice job.
Thanks.
John.